Good afternoon. I'm Hannah Levine. You've got it tuned to the home stretch on 91.3 FM, KXCI Tucson, streaming online everywhere at kxci.org. It's just past 4 o'clock, which means it's time for my regular guest, Chris Carey, volunteers his time each week to select and research our classic picks. And this week, he's coming in with an album from the Carpenters. A Song for You came out on this very day back in 1972. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, this came out today, 48 years ago. This was the Carpenters' fourth studio LP. The Carpenters, of course, were a brother-sister soft rock duo consisting of Karen Carpenter as lead vocalist and drummer, and Richard Carpenter, who had numerous roles, including producer, arranger, pianist, songwriter, composer, and occasionally he sung as well. It's funny, as Karen Carpenter, is that a lot of people don't realize that she was quite adept at the drums. Very good. As a matter of fact, just before this interview, I was looking at a bunch of old YouTube TV specials and different things. She's quite a good drummer. Her vocals are so amazing that that often overshadows the fact that she was a very good drummer. And it's kind of interesting, is they toured a lot and she would sing and drum at the same time. Oftentimes they toured with a drummer too, so sometimes she could just focus on her vocals. But I mean, that's something to talk about with this band. And I think that sometimes this band, being the soft rock band that they are, people will discount how amazing both her vocals and her musicianship was, as well as Richard Carpenter was a great keyboard player. They officially formed in the 1960s in suburban LA. The Carpenter family moved from New Haven, Connecticut when the siblings were teenagers. And Richard had already been playing out. He was 4 years older than Karen. He'd already been playing out in nightclubs as a jazz trio in Connecticut. And so when they moved to California, he put together another kind of jazz trio called the Richard Carpenter Trio, which included Karen. And that was the first time that they started playing together. That was 1965, when Richard was 19 and Karen was 15. They got signed to a small Southern label, released a couple of singles that were unsuccessful, and then the trio fell apart. The siblings started another band called Spectrum, which soon fell apart after that. And after that point, the siblings just decided to play together, and they recorded some demos, which actually found their way into the hands of Herb Alpert. And Herb Alpert is not only the famous trumpet player and leader of the Tijuana Brass, he was also the co-founder of A&M Records. So he was a record exec. He saw the talent in the duo right away, signed them in April of 69, and later that year they released their debut Offering. That debut kind of, even though it had a really cool cover of the Beatles' Ticket to Ride, it didn't make much of a splash. But when they released their second album, Close to You, featuring the big single on that was Burt Bacharach's Close to You, that did really good. It was a smash success. It actually became number one, and their album did very well. And so when they released their third album, Carpenters, 1971, that did great. It had singles on it that did really well too. So by the time they entered the studio to work on their fourth LP, they were bona fide superstars. They recorded the record in A&M Studios. And the funny thing is, the first four albums, production credit goes to a guy named Jack Daugherty. And after this album, actually, it's always production credit goes to Karen and Richard. And there was actually a lawsuit after this, and it was very complicated with A&M and everything. And he never worked with the Carpenters again. And every subsequent album, it was just the Carpenters. And there was actually an interview with Richard Carpenter years later to ask what Jack Daugherty, what was his influence on their early albums. And he said, nothing. We did it all. But they were kind of assigned this guy from the label. And later on, when they had more prominence, they were able to just say, no, we can produce it. This was the last time that they worked with this guy. This album was incredibly commercially successful. It sold over 3 million copies in the U.S. What's funny is the Carpenters, too, like we talk about a lot of bands that oftentimes do really well in the U.K. and North America and sometimes worldwide. But the Carpenters, while they did get some success in the U.K., and also Japan, for the most part, they were just big in North America. Both Canada and the United States, they did really well. This particular album, I mean, there were six singles on this album. And, you know, even a lot of big albums by a lot of bands in the 70s, usually it was two, maybe three singles that came off a record that was considered very successful. And this one had six, including Top of the World, which was a number one hit single. If I'm correct, that's one of the best-selling singles from the whole decade of the 1970s. It was huge. That was a huge, huge hit. And I mean, still today you hear it occasionally. At the time, the Carpenters' popularity kind of confounded critics. Most contemporary critics didn't like them very much. They didn't like the ballads and the mid-tempo kind of soft pop stuff. And even some critics went as far as to call them bland or saccharine. Nevertheless, the recording industry saw how popular they were. They got several awards over the years. I believe they ended up getting several Grammy nominations and a couple of Grammy awards over the years. And then immediately after the 70s, probably in the 80s, kind of lost their hit factor. But over time, people have come to realize how talented they were as singers and performers and sometimes songwriters. They did perform a lot of covers, actually, on this album. Not only is the name of this album A Song for You, based on the Leon Russell song. I mean, that this is a cover, A Song for You, which Leon first put out just 2 years prior to this on his self-titled debut. And they also did a Carole King song on this album, too. But like I said, over time, these guys got to be really respected by a lot of people in that they were incredibly talented. And they did make some, I mean, incredibly hooky, catchy songs. What's funny is even NPR and Rolling Stone have gone as far to say that Karen Carpenter has one of the greatest female vocalists. She's one of the greatest female vocalists of all time. Paul McCartney has said that he thinks she's the best female voice ever. And bands like the Bengals and Concrete Blonde and Cranberries, even Michael Jackson, have cited the Carpenters as a major influence to what they did. Actually, Sonic Youth.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, of course, is Sonic Youth loved them too. Yeah. And that's very much on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, Kim Gordon listened to the Carpenters a ton when they were kids, yeah.
Sonic Youth had a song that they wrote specifically for Karen Carpenter called Tunic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, song for Karen. Kim Gordon thought she was great. So they ended up influencing quite a bit, specifically in the whole soft rock kind of scene. Even though a lot of artists that went on to do different things, the fact that this artist was so, specifically Karen Carpenter, really resonated with a lot of young, specifically female musicians when they were growing up in the 70s and early 80s. Following this album, the Carpenters released several more EPs. None of them were quite as successful as their second, third, and fourth release, but they still sold very well. They ended up recording 10 albums, which sold over 90 million units worldwide. So they were not only one of the best-selling bands of the 1970s, you could probably say they were possibly the best-selling soft rock act of all time. Air Supply might have sold quite a bit too. They had 3 number one singles, 12 top 10 singles on the Billboard singles chart. They toured a ton too throughout the 1970s. They were doing between 175 and over 200 acts a year for several years in a row, which that's a pretty exhaustive touring schedule. And it did take their toll on them. In 1979, Richard actually had to take time off from the band to deal with a Quaalude addiction. And about the same time in the late 70s, Karen started suffering from anorexia. The band ended in 1983 when she died from heart failure that was brought about by anorexia. And she was just 32 at the time. And this, actually, a lot of people cite her death as the first time that eating disorders were really brought to the forefront and became something that was discussed more openly than they ever had been before. And then Richard, he recovered and he's gone on. He's done some things after that, but never to the degree that they did when he was working with his sister. He's still alive today at 73.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.